Okay, so if everybody's ready, we're going to address the much-awaited email debate. Do you call people? Do you email them? What do you do? And what I tell people and what salespeople generally do is they regard voicemail as like a mini commercial, for lack of a better word. The person that you're calling gets to hear your voice. They get to hear what you sound like. You get to show off a little bit, if you will, and tell them what's great about your venue. But a lot of people just don't deal with voicemail anymore. You know, I have people who say to me, I never get my voicemail, or I pick it up maybe once a week and I jot the messages down. So it's a real problem. But I don't think, even in this very modern day and age, I don't think email is a good way to sell. It's a good way to forward information. It's a good way to underscore what you're trying to say. It's a good way to forward information along. But really, I think sales remains people to people. So I think what you should do, because it's in a modern day and age, is you should do both things at the same time. You should call them and let them know you'll be calling them back, and also emailing them at the same time, so that you're acknowledging both the modern world that we live in and more the old-fashioned world, if you will, of face-to-face, open communication. I have one thing that I ask my clients, and this is a good thing for you to ask your clients as well, is I say to them, when do you like to be contacted? When do you like to be communicated with? And then I use ACT, and I jot down what they say. And they'll say, every Tuesday and Thursday, I'm in the office at 6 a.m. Call me then. And I get started really early. And they give me the various times. Or they'll say, just email me. If you have something to say, email me. And this is the best time to email me, and I'll get right back to you. So I try to the best of my ability to be respectful and to call them when they ask me to call them. And they always sound surprised. They always say, oh, wow, you're one of the few people who actually listened and did it. But what I found is when I respect what they tell me, when I ask them when it is they like to be communicated with, and I respect that, what I find is when I want to communicate with them in another way, they're really open to it. One of my biggest clients runs an ambulance company, and he only likes to deal with me by email. And once in a while, email doesn't get the job done. I've got to talk to him. And so I'll leave him a voicemail, or I'll send him an email and say, Mike, we really need to talk. And he always fits me in. He always makes sure he gives me time. He gives me time usually within the day, and we talk. And I think that's because I respect what he asked me to do. I try to follow it to the letter. And then when I do need another form of communication, he's open to it, and he's willing to do it. And you might find the same thing. So with email, and when you haven't spoken to the person and you don't really know them yet, one attachment only. It should not be very cumbersome, and it should never, ever have pricing. You don't have any kind of a relationship with this person yet, and you don't want them to go or not go with you based on pricing that they read in something you forwarded to them. So what I say is attachment by permission only. When you start loading up attachments, people can find it offensive. They haven't asked for it. It's something they now need to handle. What do they do with it? One attachment only, until you have a relationship with them. And even after that, always agree on what you can send them. So this is what Art Sobchak says about email. And yes, it's Winston Churchill, and no, it is not a typo. And he says it's just another way to touch base with your customer. It's another way for them to get to know you. It's another way to go about the process. It should never take the place of an actual sale. So in the next exercise that you have, does everybody have the next exercise, Tony? There's a template there for an email. So why don't you go ahead and fill that in? Basic information when we're talking about an email, when you don't have a relationship with someone yet. Okay, so because we're talking about email, I'm just going to have one or two people read their email. Obviously, it's nothing. You're not going to interact with another person. So where is Tony? I commandeered this table to volunteer and read a couple of their emails.
All right. Hi, everyone. Okay, so I changed things a little, but I deviated from the script just a little to use words that made me comfortable, and Suzanne said that was okay. Hello, this is Jessica Roberts, and I'm the Director of Sales and Special Events at the Riggs Alumni Center at the University of Maryland. I received notification from Unique Venues that you expressed potential interest in holding a wedding at our facility. We host approximately 40 weddings annually. For your convenience, I've attached information regarding our wedding packages and will follow up with you at a later date. I guess I need to give a more... I didn't get to that part, so I guess I'll say...
I'll give you a call
in a few days.
Keep
my contact information
easy.
Is below.
Yeah. Keep things light.
In case you have any questions.
Yeah.
And then I always kind of mention my cell phone is down there, too, if you can't reach me in the office, and it's in my signature. We're so glad that you contacted us. I look forward to speaking with you soon. Best regards, Jessica.
Great. Perfect. One other from this table?
We didn't do another.
No, we all helped her.
Oh.
They were helping me find words.
Okay, all right. Anybody else want to volunteer to read theirs? Anybody else feel comfortable? Okay, so I had a very good question from this table. Oh, okay. Okay. The question was posed to me, do I have to use verbatim what you have put up here? Like, in other words, do I have to use your script word for word? And the answer is no, you don't. There are words that I would use that you might never feel comfortable using. A couple of people said they don't want to have to say preliminary very often. They would like to find an easier word to use. And that's fine. You use the words that work for you. You've got the general template, though, and you have the general idea of what you can say to people. But pick words that feel good for you and that work for you.
Hear me?
No, I'm just waiting for... No.
I have a question about salutation. I noticed that there's no salutation on this email. Is that deliberate, or what is an appropriate salutation to include on an email? Because I see everything from, hi, Jesse, to dear Miss Brophy, to hello. Do you use salutations on business emails?
I just use their first name, comma, and then at the end I say best regards, because I just don't like best. I never understood it, but I know a lot of people use it and they're fine with it. And so I don't say hi, I don't say dear, I just use their first name.
Question, in regards to, you're introducing yourself up front, do you do anything different to your signature, or do you just repeat your signature on your email, even though you just stated it on the top part?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I probably just repeat it, okay. You know, because that's the first thing they're seeing. And I don't want them to think that I'm trying to pretend I'm someone they know better than they do. So, yeah, I would say I repeat it.
Okay, I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Mine's a little bit more nitpicky about the I'm the blank, and you put in your title.
Uh-huh.
I work for a state agency, and so we have all the bureaucratic titles that really don't mean anything to anybody outside of the university world. And because I'm a one-person department, I'm kind of all-inclusive. So when I actually give them my full title or I give them my business card, they really don't understand the context of what I really do.
Okay.
So how do I build that confidence so that they can actually trust me and, you know, feel like I can take care of everything?
Well, how would you describe it in layman's terms? How would you describe if someone said to you, create your own title or just tell me really quickly what you do, what would you say?
I tell them that, you know, I'm pretty much just the assistant director or director because that's what people resonate with. But I really just avoid talking about a title altogether, and I just say I can help you with anything and everything because that's
Just say I'm in charge of helping you facilitate your event, or I'm the person who will help you bring your event from a thought to reality, or I'm the one who helps you put your event on. I would just say something words to that effect. If the title really trips people up and if it's off-putting, I wouldn't even use it. And I think it's great that you've even thought about that. You know, that it might not work for everyone. They end up thinking you do something, maybe you don't. I think that's great. And part of being a good salesperson is being sensitive to how other people react to things.
I just wanted to speak to that because I work for a state agency too.
And I ran into that. So what I did is I just changed my title. I talked to the HR person about it, and so she could understand that we're the oddball out and revenue generating for the college. And I just did conference center manager because I figured that that's pretty basic, that everybody could understand that. And in that way, it communicated it out, but then I didn't have to offend because it's just in my emails. It's just in my correspondence. I didn't have to change my business card, even though I'm going to eventually do that. But then it was just a business type of sale, you know, relationship. So that might help if you did that.
That's a good idea. Thanks for sharing. That's why we sort of stand up and share our different ideas. It helps other people. Okay, so... Right.
How about having a website in the email? Would that be considered too much information?
Is it in your signature?
No.
I would put it in your signature. And no, I wouldn't consider the website too much information. It's public information, and they can find it anyway if they want to. Okay. So no, I wouldn't consider it too much information. Mine, I think, is on my signature. If they want to go there, that's fine. It's public information. The battle of the microphones.
Got all the microphones I could ask for. I've got a question about, so you mentioned, you know, only wanting to attach one item to your email if it's the first contact.
If you even attach anything at all.
If anything at all. And also not including pricing in that first
correspondence. Do not include pricing.
And my question is around, so something that we do at IIT is we try to just get as much information out there up front as possible to reduce the amount of times that we have to volley back and forth and back and forth to get them all the information that they need. And so I'm trying to get a sense for how you balance the idea of trying to roll out that relationship in a comfortable pace for the client, but also not putting the responsibility on me and my sales staff of three people to have that, you know, five email exchange with our 300 different clients that we're dealing with that, you know, that year.
And we'll talk about that. I'll get to the part of the sale where we talk about the qualifying questions that you ask people. And that's where you really sort of figure out how you're going to move forward with this particular person, is you ask really good questions. You get a really good feel for what it is they want, and then you sort of mutually agree how you're going to move forward together. All right, and that comes with asking good questions. Does that answer your question?
Not quite. What I'm looking for is, I guess, balancing the workload of having to correspond with all of the clients that we need to correspond with.
Okay.
You know, versus, you know, wanting to give each client the time and attention that they need.
Okay, so if you don't send them pricing, then you put yourself in a situation where they're asking this question and that question and you're having to get back with them.
Right, yeah.
Right, and we'll talk about that when we get to the interview phase, and I'll give you some tips so that it doesn't get too out of control, because it can. It can turn into a big correspondence with people, and you are busy, and you do have a lot of other things to do. That's what I do there. Okay, and Jill Conrath wrote a great book called Snap Selling. She, in fact, is a good friend of mine. She's a great lady, and this is what she says about email and voicemail and how you communicate with people. And what you really need to do is make a conscious effort to find out how they want to be communicated with and then kind of live up to the spirit and the letter of it. And I can tell you I've found with my clients, both in my career as a salesperson and as a consultant, that the more you communicate with them the way they like it, the more they will compromise with you when you need to do other things. Okay, so this is where we come to the discovery conversation. And this goes back to your question of how do you avoid that constant back and forth of, and how much was it for the tablecloths and, you know, the chairs included, and avoid that kind of thing. And this is where we come to the discovery conversation. So somehow or other, whether it's via email, whether it's via voicemail, whether it's a combination of all those things, you have finally made contact with this person. You've either talked to them right then and there, or you've set up a time to discuss their situation with them. And this is what we call the discovery conversation. And this is what Stephen Schiffman has written, a great series of sales books, and this is what he says about the discovery conversation. And this is what Marguerite Smolin says about it in her The Everything Selling book. And I tell people the easiest way to remember this is think of opening a door for someone else. You don't do anything until that person has already walked all the way through the door. In other words, you wouldn't offer to open a door for someone. They get halfway through and you close it. You wouldn't do it. Them get all the way through. Don't ever start talking about your venue until you've asked them every conceivable question that you can think of that's pertinent to what's going on. Okay, so to have a good discovery conversation, you have to be able to ask a lot of different questions. And what really good salespeople know is that there are all kinds of questions. There are types of questions. And one type of question is a closed-ended question. There are open-ended questions, and there are probing questions. And what good salespeople do is use questions as a tool in their toolkit, and they bring out the different questions at the different times to get the answers that they're looking for. And the first type of question is a closed-ended question. Why that keeps happening? And this is what Tom Hopkins says in his book, Sales Prospecting for Dummies. And this is what Linda Richardson says in her book, Perfect Selling. And this doesn't mean that closed-ended questions are bad. We wouldn't get anywhere in life if we couldn't ask any closed-ended questions. At some point, the answer has to be yes or no, or it has to be definitive. But with closed-ended questions, to the best of your ability, you want to try to use them as infrequently as possible. So I'm going to go back on stage and look at my notes. So you have your card. Some of you have black playing cards. Some of you have red playing cards. And what I'd like you to do now is move around a little bit so you are working with people that you haven't met yet. And if you have a red card, match up with another red card person. If you have a black card, match up with another black card person. Move around a little bit. I want everybody to be slightly uncomfortable and meet some new people because sales and contacting new people is slightly uncomfortable. So if you get up and move around and meet some red and black cards, that would be great. You can hold up your card and... Okay, is everybody ready? Has everybody changed tables and found a... Okay, so we're going to start off by asking our partner what area of the country they live in, and then we're going to ask a closed-ended question about the area of the country that they live in. A closed-ended question, remember, they're answered by yes or no, a definitive answer. There's no expounding on the point. So ask your partner a closed-ended question about the area of the country that they live in. Okay. And jot down the question that you ask, please. All right, now we're going to move on to open-ended questions. And this is what Zig Ziglar, the very famous sales author, says about open-ended questions. He calls them open-door questions. And this is what Linda Richardson says about open-ended questions. So open-ended questions cannot be answered with a yes or a no. They're not one answer. You guys. Okay, so ask your partner an open-ended question about the area of the country that they live in. Remember, give them a chance to expand. Ask them a question that allows them to expand on a point. Talk to you a little bit about where they live. So ask your partner an open-ended question. Okay, and now we're going to talk about probing questions. And a probing question is a follow-on to an open-ended question. So you ask me something about the area of the country that I live in, and then whatever I say, you take a piece of that and you probe a little deeper. This is what Linda Richardson says about probing questions. So you dive down and just ask something, but it has to be based on something they've already said. So think about what they told you about the area of the country that they live in and dig a little deeper. Pick one part of it, one part of the description, and ask them a question.
Whoops.
If everybody's ready, we have two volunteers. They're going to share their questions with us. Open-ended, closed-ended, and probing. Are you ready?
Okay. Is it cold in Canada?
Yes.
What do you like most about living in Canada?
I would like the scenery and the glacier lakes that are on top of the mountains that you can hike up to. What's that? Oh, did I?
Describe some aspects, or can you describe some aspect of the scenery? Because when I asked about...
What did I say the first time?
The scenery.
I just said scenery. I just said scenery. The answer to my second question is just scenery.
So can you describe one aspect of the scenery in Canada that you like?
Yes. I like the mountains, the greenery, and the glacier lakes that sit on top of the mountains just outside Vancouver.
Very good.
Okay.
My turn. Do you work in a city?
Yes.
What is your favorite part about working in a city?
I like the fact that this is a small city, and it has the amenities of shopping and close grocery stores, but it also has the pretty nature and venues around.
About the nature and the venues, how close are the mountains and the trails to where you work?
They're very close. We're about a half an hour from the Appalachian Trail. You can get up on Skyline Drive and the mountains, and very close to hiking trails, and just, you know, very close, around 10 minutes, you can get to a real pretty sight.
Very nice.
Thank you. Thank you. What did you notice when he asked her or she asked him a closed-ended question? What was the difference that you noticed in how they answered it? Kind of closed off, unemotional. It's just, so you want to ask, you have to ask closed-ended questions sometimes, but you want to, for the most part, keep your questions open and probing. Okay, stay with your same partner. And this time, ask them about their favorite hobby. And ask them a closed-ended question, an open-ended question, and a probing question.